This is the Talon Marks Campus News Hour on WPMD On The Net, bringing you what's happening and who's happening on the campus of Cerritos College. Here are your hosts, Tito Benavides and Enrique Rivera.
Today is October 26, 2011. Welcome to Talon Marks Campus News Hour on WPMD.org On The Net, bringing you news and information campus-wide. I'm your host and Campus News Hour Director, Tito Benavides.
I'm Staff Writer Enrique Rivera.
I'm Guest Host and Production Manager Vic Diaz.
Good morning, Falcons. Students and faculty hurried out their buildings for the annual statewide earthquake drill on campus on October 20th as part of the Great California Shakeout. Staff Writer Enrique Rivera reporting.
Foster Kinship and Veteran Services.
What can you tell us about today's earthquake drill?
This was an earthquake drill, earthquake preparedness drill throughout the campus. And what we did was plan a disaster medical drill so that we could come out here and see what's going on. We partnered with the fire department across the street. They are number 115. And they came out and assisted us and kind of showed us what we're supposed to do on prioritizing, how we're supposed to get students and staff, anybody injured, to these areas, what we're supposed to do, how to triage, how to set up, where to go. We also found that we're at a deficit. So deficit of personnel and deficit of actually people, individuals that can help. They showed us how to do a lot of this. This is how we learn. So, and this is great for us. So now we know quite a bit more as to how we're set up, how we're going to triage, because triaging is different from actually caring for individuals that come into the medical clinic. Triage is there's an immediate care, and we've got to get to them now to save their lives. Medical care in our clinics is how can we prevent and how can we actually take care of an illness. This is not an illness. This is a disaster, and it's an immediate care. So I think we learned a lot. I'm really happy we got to do this. I will be writing up a report and sending it to Dr. Lacey and letting her know that we've got some work to do.
What do you think about the victims? The
victims were excellent. I wish we would have had more student participation. We did try and get some clubs to participate, and whatever we had here, I think we had about 15, almost 20 students. They were excellent. We had them dress up with Halloween costume, and they had all kinds of lacerations, and we had several that came to us, and they were pronounced dead on arrival because they were so bad. We had others that had bones sticking out and screwdrivers and knives, and it was really great. They were great actors. We thank all of them. They did a wonderful job.
For students who want to participate next time, what do they got to do?
Actually, just come and sign up. We'll do it one time a year, generally this time every year, because they do the earthquake preparedness type thing. We will be doing this next year because I think it's vital that we get ourselves organized and pick up those items that the fire department saw our deficits in. And we'll have the students sign up with, we'll put out a better email blast to students so that we can know. General Nye Bueno, I have to tell her thank you so much. She organized the students coming out and got them dressed and got them all set. And so it worked out wonderful. So generally they'll report or check in with Nye Bueno in the PE department, and we'll try and keep the same type of organization going.
Anything else on the drill?
I'd just like to thank the staff. The Student Health Services staff was excellent, well-prepared, got everything organized, came out here and set up in a matter of minutes, take down in a matter of minutes. So I think they did a great job.
Okay. I'm Oscar La Torre, and I'm majoring in kinesiology.
How do you feel about your experience as a victim?
It was good. It was actually fun, you know. We all got to help each other out, make ourselves look nasty and everything. For me, I had a neck injury. Well, I hit myself in the head, and after that, I actually got cut in the throat. But at the end, I ended up dying because I didn't survive, so I actually bleed to death. So it was actually a good experience, and I actually liked it. I don't mind doing it again next year.
Javier Castillo, my major is kinesiology.
Okay, how do you feel about your experience?
My experience right now is really pretty good because just learn about, you know, just help the nurses or the doctors so they could get prepared themselves. For evacuation or something, or like earthquake or something. But it was a good intense and everything. And
what happened to you? What was your accident?
My accident, I got jumped, and then my arm, you can see my bones popping out and everything, so yeah. But I got lucky, I survived.
Ernest Wilson, music.
Okay, what do you think about this earthquake drill?
Everyone's everywhere, so I guess it's good to be prepared.
Influenza can occur anytime, but most influenza occurs from October to May. According to Real Scottish Students Health Service, a contagious respiratory illness is caused by influenza viruses. It can cause mild to severe illness and at times can lead to death. The best way to prevent the flu is by getting a flu vaccination each year. Staff writer Christina Navarro reporting.
Melissa, what's your major?
Music.
Have you had a flu shot? Or,
are you planning to?
Probably not.
Are you aware that Cerritos College offers flu shots?
Yes.
The flu shots that health services offer cost $5. Do you think it's worth it?
Possibly, yes.
What's your name?
Brandon.
What's your last name?
Davidson.
Your major?
Undecided.
Have you had your flu shot already?
No.
College has one. Are you willing to pay $5 for it?
No.
My name is Rachel Villanueva, and my major is athletic training.
Have you ever had your flu shot already?
I actually have had my flu shot.
But Cerritos College has one, and are you willing to pay $5 for it, if ever?
Actually, that's a pretty good price. It's good for the students.
ASCC award applications are currently available at the Student Activities Office and online at cerritos.edu/activities/awards program up until November 9th. The awards that will be given out will vary depending on the criteria that applicants need to follow. Staff writer Philip Oakley reporting.
Holly Bogdanovich, Director of Student Activities. Currently, we have out awards applications for our fall semester. It's for students who have volunteered their time on campus, so unpaid positions, volunteering. They participated, maybe worked on floats, participated as a member of the mock rally. Clubs and organizations who had bake sales where students volunteered their time, volunteered for the breast cancer awareness week, any kind of volunteer work on campus where the student volunteered their time and hours of service. And we also have applications out for ICC scholarships. So if a person is a member of a club or organization, they can apply for an ICC scholarship. We also have nominations for outstanding advisor for the clubs that have advisors. They want to make sure to nominate their advisors for an award.
And what are the difference between like the service certificates and the bronze, silver, and gold ones?
Well, what we have is students who turn in their applications by the deadline, which is November 9th, which is a Wednesday before 3 o'clock. That's when the applications are due. We have it available online where they can fill it in, bring it into student activities, and drop it off. Then what happens is the awards, we blank out students' names and information, and we have a group of a committee who goes through the applications and they rank them by levels, what would be considered a gold, a silver, a bronze, or a certificate for service. So maybe a student who just did one event one time, a couple hours, that might be a certificate. They helped out. We want to recognize their contribution. Where somebody who is president of a club, and then also a member of three other clubs, did the homecoming, ran for homecoming queen, was a member of the mock rally, and helped out with the breast cancer, just has everything nook and cranny, volunteered many service hours, and last year they got a award of some level. So it's different levels of service, and then they're ranked and broken down. It's a percentage of how many applications come in. Usually about the top 5% get gold. Somewhere in there, the next 10% per se gets silver, and then about the next 15% gets bronze, and then certificates after that. It just depends on how many applications are in, how it's broken down. Last fall, I think we had almost or about 200 applications turned in the fall, give or take a couple. But we usually get pretty mad. For students who volunteer, even if it's just for one thing, it's a good thing to put in that you put in for awards application. All you have to be is an enrolled student, have a 2.0 GPA, and you qualify to turn in for an award. And it looks good when you're getting ready to transfer off. It shows your volunteer services, and it's just one more thing you can put down as an award or certificate that you received. And if they want more information, they can go to the website. If you go to the cerritos.edu/activities, in the navigation bar, it says awards program. In there, it talks about the different levels of awards and what's out there, and different things you can do to hopefully get yourself higher and higher on the list.
Cerritos College's newest club, the Transfer Club, is open for all students to join, including those who are looking for help and information about college options after Cerritos College. Staff writer James Williams reporting.
Marvelina Barcelo.
What is your title on campus and with the club?
Well, here at Cerritos College, I'm a counselor and also transfer center co-director. And I'm also one of the advisors to our new transfer club that started this fall semester.
And what does the transfer club do?
The transfer club, its purpose was intended to get students that aren't really aware of the transfer process to provide them with information ahead of time versus to learn all the information about the transfer process later and then the student cannot apply. A lot of it is just bringing the resources to them and also giving them the space that they need as transfer students to do the things that perhaps the campus cannot provide them, such as attending university tours. The transfer center can only do so many university tours, but perhaps with a club and fundraising and the goals of the club, they perhaps can create university tours through their club that would not be offered on a regular basis through our transfer center.
And is there any real specific other campuses you guys plan to visit, or are you guys waiting maybe to see what some of the people who decide to come, what their interests are as far as campuses, and then decide?
Well, what I heard from the meeting, even though I'm an advisor, I mean, a lot of it is run through what the students want. So from what I heard today's meeting, there are plans to attend a USC university tour, and the transfer center only offers that tour every fall semester, so our USC tour passed. So if students really wanted to go to that tour, they would have to wait another year. So in this case, the transfer club can initiate another tour to that campus and give students another opportunity to visit and not have to wait until next fall semester.
And now, can anyone join this club?
Absolutely, yes.
There's no requirements?
No requirements.
So you don't have to be here for the first meeting. You can just walk in whenever?
At this point, yes. It is a new club, mm-hmm. So, you know, students are still going to be learning about when it meets. So, yes, it's a fairly new club. You know, students can come and join at any time, but hopefully they would continue to stay in with the meetings. It only meets twice a month.
I heard you guys talking about fundraisers. What kind of fundraisers do you guys think you might be running?
Because this is barely the club's fourth meeting, you know, obviously there's not a lot of money for the club yet. So the idea of what ways the club can fundraise is a big issue because the students want to do a lot of activities. So there definitely needs to be a discussion on what kind of fundraisers and different ways. So I think for today's meeting, it was just to brainstorm and just kind of pick on that brain and see what we come up with. I think it'll probably take some students time to see what really we can do, but you never know. There may be someone that has a really, really bright idea. So, you know, the club needs to hear that and get moving on it.
And what did you guys talk about in some of your previous meetings?
2 weeks ago, the president of the transfer club, Elizabeth, had set up the Fullerton representative to come out to the meeting. So she actually was here for the meeting to do a presentation on Cal State Fullerton admissions requirements. And the meeting before that, I believe they had voting for the positions of president, vice president, historian, and all that stuff, okay. Which takes some time.
I heard you talking about GPA, they were lowering them, or?
The trend has been from fall 10 to fall 11 with Long Beach and Cal State Fullerton. It has gone down, which is a positive thing for our students.
For which students?
For Cerritos College students and anyone that's considered out of area, such as, you know, Rio Hondo, El Camino, Cerritos, we're all out of Fullerton and Long Beach's area. So from fall 10 to fall 11, the GPA has gone down.
And you were talking about common applications. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yeah, the common application is not really something that is widely discussed among students and probably the transfer center, but it is a form of application that many states and universities use, even foreign countries use. It's just a way to kind of simplify the application process for students because it asks the same thing. So why I brought it up today is because USC is going to use the Common Application for the very first time for fall 2012. And for fall 2011, we had 95 of our students apply to USC, so that's pretty significant. So now that there's been that change, we want to make sure students know they can find it on our website.
And how come the USC is really switching to that now?
I guess they were convinced that it is a better way to a better tool for them to use to admit students.
Okay, can you tell me your first and your last name?
Yeah, Adrian Monreal.
And what is your major here at Cerritos?
My major here at Cerritos primarily is English. Like, I want to be able to write in articles, like in magazines and newspapers and stuff like that.
What made you decide to come to the Transfer Club meeting today?
Transfer Club, because it's very informative. It helps you out with a bunch of different applications and deadlines and everything that you need to help you to transfer as soon as possible and other information as well.
How did you hear about it?
My friend, her name's Mallory, she told me about it. She's the one who had heard about it. She just told me, hey, you should check this club out.
Where do you plan to transfer to?
I want to go to Northridge, Cal State Northridge, and Irvine. But I've already applied now to many different Cal States, like Long Beach, Dominguez Hills, and I'm going to start my applications for the UCs.
How many years have you been at Cerritos?
This is my third year here.
Okay, so you're just like a sophomore?
Yeah, sophomore, junior, kind of junior.
And what did you get out of today's meeting?
What I mostly got out of is the personal statements, because you know, I'm gonna start doing those right now, and I kind of have a gist of what they are, what I have to write about, but at the same time, I still would like to have like the most perfect personal statement as possible, so that I can, you know, get a higher chance of getting accepted.
Do you plan on coming to any more transfer club
meetings?
Yeah,
I'm actually the historian of this meeting. Like, I take pictures, like, when we have representatives from different colleges and other club events as well. And I also document, like, what happened. And we actually are about to start our own blog site, so, like, we can post the pictures up. And once we get the content on there, we can, like, start posting in, like, the website or whatever.
Cerritos College is adding a 12-week summer session, which will be divided into two sets of 6 weeks each, effective summer 2012 semester. During this summer session, students will have the opportunity to take 12 units rather than six. Staff writer Lucia Sarabia reporting.
I'm Deborah Moore. I'm the president of Faculty Senate, and I'm also a librarian here.
You know about the summer school, they're going to add classes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so when are they going to start?
Well, the proposal at the moment that's been described to me is to have 2 6-week sessions back to back, and then another one, that 6-week session that goes across the fiscal year, that's sort of in the middle.
Oh, okay.
That's what Dr. Brock described to me.
And that starts 2012?
Yes. Mm-hmm. So the first 6-week session would start almost right after spring, like the Monday. Spring would end Friday and summer would start Monday.
Oh, I
the
see.
First 6-week session would start right away.
Okay. What about the other one?
For a while, they were talking about starting June 25th for that one in the middle. And usually it's up to the divisions and the departments to figure out what are the best classes to offer.
Oh, okay.
We had been asking in Senate, or our thought was, when there are classes that come in a sequence, that it would be good to offer, like, English 20 in the first session and English 52 in the second, or 52 in the first and 100 in the second, so that students could get through 2 in the sequence in the summer and then be ready for 100 in the fall.
We know that the fees are increasing from 36 to 46. When is this going to start?
I don't think it's totally settled, though it probably will happen. I don't know that it's totally signed into law yet. But I think they have succeeded in asking. I think it might have taken effect in the summer.
How would this benefit students?
Well, I think this arrangement, having a back-to-back, 6 and 6, the faculty think it helps because people could choose to do that sequencing thing. They could, or they could get a prerequisite out of the way. If they want to take History 101, they need to get through English 52. So they could take English 52 the first session and History the second. Or, like we talked about, English or math. I don't think students choose as much to do math in that way, but English, I think they have found short sessions work well for them, so they might do 20 and 52 or 52 and 100. So I think that's the real benefit of having 2 back-to-back ones. So you have to be pretty determined because it's going to be kind of a busy summer, but if they're up for it. they could get two classes out of the way.
Do you think there's going to be a lot of students still on waiting list?
Yes, I can only imagine there will still be lots of students on the waiting list.
Stephen Johnson, Vice President of Student Services.
You were told that summer school sessions were going to be added?
The summer school, you know, runs mm-hmm. from the mid to late part of May to the middle part of August, or early middle part of August. Okay. Mm-hmm. What we're looking at is we have the regular 6-week session, having another 6-week session so that we have some more classes, we can offer some more classes. Now what happens anyway is because programs, say there may be a program in the health occupations area that runs 11 or 12 months a year, mm-hmm. Those programs continue meeting, so they're in one of the sessions that's not just 6 weeks, it'll be longer. And there are a few other classes that, because of the nature of the class, is offered on a longer period of time. So that happens pretty much, you know, every summer, just standard.
And when is this going to start?
This would be for this coming summer, 2012. Some classes would start after spring semester, mm-hmm. and some would start later in the summer, end of okay. June, beginning of July. Part of what this will do, not only, but part of this will give students an opportunity maybe to take classes in two different sessions during the summer if they're available. For instance, back before the budget problems with the state, we would have a summer session that started in late May, right after spring ended, and went right up to almost to the 4th of July.
Okay.
And then right after the 4th of July, another session would start.
Oh, I see.
Okay. And that would fill the summer, which is roughly 12 weeks.
Oh, okay.
About 3 months, roughly 12 weeks. So this way we'll have, whereas this last summer we had very little in that first summer session, this summer we'll have a little bit more.
More?
Classes.
Classes.
Yeah.
Do you know what type of classes will be added?
Don't have the particulars yet.
What about tuition increasing?
Tuition increasing. Well, here's what we see on the horizon. First of all, the state budget was passed in such a way that if revenue, meaning primarily tax revenue, comes in below what was required, there would be a cut to the community college budgets and an increase in student fees. And that increase would the fees would go from $36 per unit to $46 mm-hmm. per unit. And originally, it was possible that that would have been implemented as early as spring. Okay, but we don't want anybody thinking that's happening because okay. they actually did agree officially to postpone that until summer if the increase is going to go in effect. So
oh, okay.
so it's this in this on this path. The revenues come in below what's required. They decide that they are going to, based on that, they're going to reduce revenue to the community colleges and increase student fees. And if they do, if all of that happens, then starting with summer 2012, the fees would go up. Now, the thing to keep in mind is that that is determined in Sacramento. Mm-hmm. The amount of the fees is not determined here.
Okay.
So the enrollment fees are determined there. And the process then is there are actually two levels at which the state budget will be analyzed for revenue. And if it comes in below a certain amount, we get one cut and the fee increase. If it comes in below an additional amount, mm-hmm. meaning the revenue is the picture is even worse, then we get less money based on that.
Mm-hmm.
And these are what they refer to as triggers in the state budget. So if the revenue comes in, then that's supposed to be the trigger for a reduction. And if the revenue comes in below another certain amount, that's a trigger for the reduction.
So how does this all benefit students here at Cerritos?
Well, the important thing is that we want to have students, you know, progress on their path toward their goals. Mm-hmm. And the good thing with these additional classes is that students will have some more opportunities to get classes in that are required that they need to take so that they can, you know, either progress on to the next level class
mm-hmm.
or progress on for next year or complete a degree or certificate.
Right.
So, yeah. That's the one of the best things about it.
As far as the wait list, you think there's going to be a lot of students still on the waiting list to get into classes?
Well, there may be, and part of that is because summer is smaller than a regular semester. Not everybody can go in the summer. Some people are working more in the summer than during the school year, so it varies. But the other thing is other colleges, again, because of the budget, may also have reduced summer sessions. So there's a lot of interest. And if there are waiting lists, and there likely will be, you know, hopefully at least adding these classes in will help with that to help reduce the number of people on waiting lists.
The South Biennial Exhibit opened on Thursday at Cerritos College Art Gallery. South Biennial is a three-part exhibition being featured in the Cerritos College Art Gallery, Rio Hondo Art Gallery, and the Bluebird Art House in Upton Whittier from October 20 to November 18. Assistant Sports Editor Lauren Gandara reporting.
Erica Figueroa, I'm undecided right now.
Why did you decide to come to this art gallery today?
Well, my painting class is right next to the room, but then I like coming to the art galleries that they have here, and my teacher recommended it, so I did come.
So you've seen all the art today that's been in the exhibit?
Yes, I saw all of it.
Okay, what did you think of the art?
I particularly found Carla Diaz's work to be interesting because of the attire she had up, the clothes, and then I liked the mask and then the little slideshow that they had. It grabbed my attention because I kind of liked the urban feel of it. That's why. And I was interested in what the architecture piece was, the mixed media one, but I don't know what it means.
Which one was your favorite piece out of all of them?
I like the mask. And the one that has a book next to it, I think it's in German. I'm presuming because I can't understand the writing, but I really liked it because I saw it first in the slideshow and I didn't know what it was, and then I saw it right there, and they actually had everything she was wearing in the exhibit too, which I thought was really interesting because you can interact with it. So the mask was my favorite piece.
My name is James McDevitt. I'm the director and generally curator, although not this time around, of the art gallery, as well as professor of art history.
So how did you find all these artists?
Well, I didn't actually. This is one of the first times that we've had, it's been done in the past, but it's rare that we've had an outside curator. And it's partly because we joined we joined up with Rio Hondo and Bluebird Art House, and we wanted to have someone who would be able to bring all three of those locations together. So rather than have anyone at, you know, each location curate, we have this outside curator who's sort of curating it as if it's one big exhibition, even though it's taking place at different venues.
And so what do you think of the art that's been displayed here at the exhibit?
I'm fairly happy with it, I would say. It's pretty extraordinary. I mean, I like the fact that the artists are working big. I'm a big fan of video and installation art. I love, in particular, the mural here. Takes advantage of this building, which we all know is, you know, slated for destruction. So I figured we might as well use it while it's here. And so the artist has built this wonderful site-specific piece that, you know, relates to her own issues of identity and with individually, but within a larger community, within an urban space, and, you know, also takes advantage of current political confrontations, and, you know, creates this evocative piece that relates to issues of collectivity and collective identity in particular.
So she came here and she painted this herself onto the wall?
No, it's not painted. It's vinyl. So it's like the window vinyl that you would normally apply on the front of a store or something. It's all one big piece, and then they printed it out in these small panels that are cut to the specific size of each one of these panels here. And then we used like a cherry picker, and we went up and applied it from the top down.
So would you say that this is your favorite piece out of all the artwork?
I wouldn't
here?
Say that. I think they're all so different. It's impossible to say which one is a favorite. I think that they all respond to different kinds of issues, and because they're so distinct, it would be comparing apples and oranges. I like them all. I mean, yeah, I don't have it. It's like picking a favorite kid. You don't do that.
Ronald Lopez, and I am the curator of the first Sur Biennale in Los Angeles. It's a three-part exhibition here at Cerritos College and Rio Hondo College and Bluebird Art House in Uptown Whittier. So today's the grand opening.
So why did you decide to have it in all three of the locations that you are having the exhibition in?
Well, when I was approached by Rio Hondo to curate a biennale or biennial, because I've lived abroad, I used to live in Istanbul, Turkey, and I ran an art center in Istanbul for about 5 years, and I was able to experience a true biennale, and a true biennale essentially takes over the entire city. So Rio Hondo's idea of a biennale was to just take over the gallery space. I thought that was kind of funny, because if you want to do a biennale, you got to do it right. And so I said, let me take over the campus. For liability issues and other things, they felt, you know, like it wasn't right. So then I thought, let's expand it to other galleries. So Robert Miller, who's, you know, the other co-founder of Suda Biennial, liked the idea and spoke to James, who's the director here at Cerritos College. And James liked the idea and jumped on board. So that's how it expanded. I mean, because I really wanted to treat the word biennial properly, because in the art world, a biennial usually represents the cream of the crop of the artist of the current day. So in the art world, I mean, it's very significant. And because LA hasn't had a true biennial, Angelenos don't have a proper sense of what a biennial is. And on top of that, actually, America really doesn't even have a true biennial. The only biennial America has is called the Whitney, and it's in New York. But even that is contained in a museum. Because if you go to Istanbul, to the Istanbul Biennale, the Shanghai Biennale, or the Triennial in Yokohama, I mean, they literally take over the city, and there's an understanding of showing important artists. Or like in Europe, you have Manifesta and Documenta, and Manifesta and Documenta are the cream of the crop. I mean, that's, for any artist, you show in those events, you're just amazing artists. And so I really wanted to bring something like that. I mean, I really feel Los Angeles should have that. So yeah, I wanted to be true to the biennial and what it means.
And so how did you choose which artists you wanted to have exhibit their artwork?
Well, I do studio visits. I go to a lot of shows, and I look at certain artists, and usually certain aesthetics or what they're doing, or maybe a certain meaning that they do attracts my attention. Then I start investigating them more. Some of the other artists in the show, you know, I asked some of my colleagues, who do you think would be right for this show, and they would recommend certain artists. And then upon those recommendations, basically investigate, you know, research the artists. What are they doing? What are they currently doing? What have they been doing? And do I think they would be suitable? You know, in the cases like with Jane Castillo, I love how she works in this large scale. Generally speaking, she likes to take over spaces, and I thought she would be perfect. And then her Colombian background, this mixed background, you know, really lends itself to the theme, which is assimilation, acculturation, adaptation. And I thought, you know, she's perfect for it. So, I mean, this piece she did, that's 17 feet by 24 feet, that wraps part of the gallery, is perfect.
Is the exhibit basically focused on South American or Latina culture?
It's focused on LA artists who have lived, descended, or been influenced by Latino culture, or in this case, culture south of the U.S. border. Mexico, Central America, South America. So, I mean, if you see in the show, we have Ilana Mann, and Ilana Mann is Jewish, you know. And at Rio Hondo, we have Ichiro Irie, who's Japanese. At Bluebird Art House, we have David Russell, who's part of an arts collective. And these individuals are not Latino, but then, you know, you can ask, why are they part of the show then? And for me, number one, it's important not to be homogenized, you know. And I think it's important to kind of open the market. And on a bigger scale, I think globally what's happening, there's a huge turbulent shifts where the influence is coming out of places like so-called third world cities and countries. But the influence is coming out of Tehran, influence is coming out of Shanghai, Mexico City, Tijuana. And I think that's really important. And so I feel this in many ways kind of pioneers that influence. And so having a Japanese artist by the name of Ichiro, he lived in Mexico City. He went there on a Fulbright scholarship, fell in love with the culture, and he speaks Spanish fluently. He became kind of this adopted Mexican, and started a Mexican contemporary art magazine while he was there. He ended up living in Mexico for 5 years and was truly influenced, and you know, became a well-known art critic in Mexico. And you know, I thought he was perfect for the show. I've worked with Ilana Mann in a previous art show. And in the previous show, she focused on two DJs that really helped shaped the Latino cultures in the 60s and 70s, and that was Huggy Boy and Art LeBeau. And I really was interested that she felt influenced by these Latino DJs. And I thought, oh, she would be perfect for this. You know, and I think it's important to bring outside voices, because then when we are able to look at our own culture from somebody else's point of view, then sometimes it helps us to see the critique, whether it's positive or negative, and I think that's really important.
So what do you think about the exhibits that are displayed here today?
Well, the show here today, I'm overwhelmed. I'm excited. I mean, I love the end results. I love what all the artists did. I mean, I really feel like they went all out. But at the same time, that's why I chose them. You know, I knew they would kick ass. So, yeah, I think it's great.
Feel the beat.
It's what's happening, who's happening at Cerritos College, and why.
Feel the beat with Talon Marks and TalonMarks.com.
It's what you're doing, what you're thinking, what you're watching and listening to.
Feel the beat with Talon Marks and TalonMarks.com.
It's your school, your town, your world, your life. Read about it in the Talon Marks and TalonMarks.com.
Feel the beat with Talon Marks and TalonMarks.com.
The Talon Marks and TalonMarks.com. The beat of Cerritos College. Talon Marks students, journalists do not live by words alone, although sometimes they have to eat them. The construction and renovation of the gym has been in progress since October 2010. Renovations are set to take up to June 2012. It has not just affected the Cerritos College wrestling, volleyball, and basketball teams, but also its students. The parking lot near the bookstore and the gym has been fenced off and has students having to go around the construction.
Staff writer Paula Perez reporting.
Philip Causey.
Okay, Philip. Has the construction of the gym posed any difficulties for you to find parking?
I didn't attend here before the construction started, so the construction hasn't really changed anything to me, but the parking just sucks altogether. There's not very much room.
So do you think it's just on this parking lot, or is it just the parking all around Cerritos?
Every parking lot is hard to find parking in.
Can I have your first and last name?
Christopher Rojas.
Okay, how much of a challenge has the gym reconstruction posed for you?
A little bit of a challenge. It's a little bit extra walking that I probably shouldn't have to walk. Because if the space was available, I'd be that much closer, regardless of where I parked. So, anyway.
Can I have your first and last name?
Katie Christensen.
Okay. How has the gym reconstruction affected you and the team?
It affected me because I went to Gar High School, and that's where all of our home games are. And I, coming to college, I thought I'd be able to get away, but I can't. So, yeah.
Is it difficult to commute to the other places that you have to practice to, or that you, like, to Gar?
No, because I drive.
Oh, okay. All right.
But it is difficult for other teams, like, of my other teammates that don't drive.
Can I have your first and last name?
Jessica Dorado.
How has the gym reconstruction affected you and the team?
I think just playing at somewhere that's, like, we're not familiar with, where for most of the players, like, we're not familiar with it, and also just coming to another gym that's, like, smaller, and we all have all the, like, Cerritos College students or athletes have to, like, share, like, the guys' basketball and the girls' basketball. So, like, it's hard for our timing for to practice and stuff. And besides that, it stinks. And it's old.
All right. Has it been difficult to play off campus at other schools?
Yeah, well, for me, I haven't had transportation. I just got a car, so it's easier now. But it's hard to, like, drive, you know, to, like, a different location when you're already, like, at school. You have to drive away from it.
So since it's been difficult, like, do you guys, like, carpool or find other, like, alternatives to get to the practices or the games?
Yeah, luckily, well, with our teammates, they have room in their cars. So, yeah, we do carpool. So it makes it easier on us that way.
Can I have your first and last name?
Madison Costello.
Okay, how has the gym reconstruction affected you and the team?
Having to drive to a different location, multiple locations for practice, and playing on a court that's smaller than the court that we will be playing for games.
Is it difficult to commute to the other places of practice that you, like, practice at or you play?
Not for me, because I drive, but I do get multiple phone calls, like, 20 to 30 minutes before practice asking for rides, so I have to go find those people and bring them to practice. So for other people, it is.
Can I get your first and last name?
My name is N.J. Flores.
And can I get your year and your major?
I'm a sophomore, and my major is in computer science. Okay.
How much of a challenge has the gym reconstruction posed for you?
During for parking? Well, since last year, I could already tell there's been a... It's already gotten a lot harder to find parking. And I have to... So when I come to class, I have to park farther and farther away from here.
Has it ever made you, like, late to class, like, to have to go around the whole construction site?
No, I just have to time myself, like, I have to leave earlier than usual.
Can I get your first name, last name, year, and major?
Robert Garcia. My year is sophomore. And my major is undecided.
Okay, how much of a challenge has the gym reconstruction posed for you?
It hasn't really been a challenge, but one thing I can say is the handball courts, they haven't been here for a minute. I have to go play handball, like, way farther, like, at Cerritos Park East to go play handball.
Cerritos College has received a 2011 Student Success Award by the California Community College Chancellor's Office for its iFalcon program. The award will be given out in November at the Community College League of California Convention's luncheon at the San Jose Fairmont Hotel, according to the Cerritos College press release. News editor Anthony Hodge reporting.
My name is Bertha Calderon. I'm a philosophy major, and I'm the president of the iFalcon Club.
First of all, congratulations for, I guess you say, award. I know you just heard about it, but what are your thoughts?
I think it's great. I think iFalcon is a great program for students. The campaign is very, very successful. The fact that they put it out there for everybody attracts more students. So it's definitely very successful. What was the other question?
Just your thoughts right now.
I'm really happy. Like, originally, I started iFalcon more than a year ago, and I loved what it had to offer because it doesn't just focus on one thing. Mm-hmm. It focuses on overall student success through academics, through linking up with other people, being active on campus. It's just everything in one, which is what I like. I like that broadness of it.
Okay. So what would you want students to know about iFalcon and why it's so successful?
Well, I think the organization is successful because of the people that work behind it. I know Dr. Reese works incredible hours for this, you know? He puts a lot of time into it. And the fact that they advertise it so much, the fact that it's everywhere, they work hard campaigning for it to be seen by every student on campus. So I think that makes it absolutely successful. And personally, like with the club, I love it because, like I said, it's very broad. It's not just one thing that it focuses on. It's overall success.
Are you going to, like, announce this to the club? How do you think the club is going to respond to it?
Definitely. I mean, anything that iFalcon does, like the campaign, I always take it to the club. Like, our new banner that they just put up, I remember within that week, I told the club members, like, guys, that's our club out there being represented. And, you know, it might not be directly linked, but it ultimately, that's what this club is about. This club is about student success, and we fundraise money for scholarships for other people. And so that's great. You know, I definitely told them. So we're having a meeting this Thursday, and I'm going to tell them, you know, like, hey, guys, this is an amazing award. Like, this is so great because iFalcon was voted, like, number one successful campaign for student success in every community college in California, which is great.
My name is Raquel Ramirez. I'm a math major, and I am events coordinator and the new homecoming queen for iFalcon.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Nice.
What's your overall thoughts on iFalcon receiving the Chancellor's Office Award?
Well, I'm completely blown away. Like, it's so exciting to hear that our school, you know, that's just another community college, that we have a program this amazing that's been recognized, you know, by the state as the best in the state. And that's just so, so inspiring, really.
What would you want students to know about iFalcon for those of them who aren't aware of it?
Well, I'd want them to know when we have our meetings and stuff, and that they can get involved, that, you know, we are open for anyone to come in and to come help out, that just to spread the word more about the whole campaign to make people better students, just to let them know that we do have the Success Center in the library, in the LRC, and that, you know, we're always here to help students out.
So if anyone is interested, could they still join, like, right now, or is it kind of too late? to be part of the iFalcon Club?
No, they can absolutely join. Our meetings are every Thursday in SS 141 at 11 o'clock, and any student can come and join, and we'll welcome them completely. We're excited to get more students, and we actually hope that this does help attract more students. That way, you know, they're not just students that go to class and go home, mm-hmm. that, you know, they do more of the extracurricular things that ultimately look really good on college applications.
My name is Dr. Steve Clifford. I am a professor of English. I'm also the co-coordinator of the iFalcon Title V grant.
Congratulations on receiving the award. Tell me your overall thoughts of this award.
I'm very pleased about the award. It was a bit of a surprise, even though, you know, we had sent in application materials, but to know that the Chancellor's Office reviewed our materials as well as work of community colleges throughout the state, and knowing that in that full review process they chose the iFalcon program was shocking and rewarding. And I think it's a nod to the great work that the college is doing as a whole, not to any single person, because work we do here at Cerritos College, and in particular in the past couple of years, in emphasizing the focus on student success, really is a testament to the amazing individuals at Cerritos who put in their time and effort to make sure that students achieve their goals.
Tell me, where were you when you first heard that you won the award?
I believe I was at home one evening, and I got an email from President Lacey that she forwarded, indicating she had got the award notification, and she forwarded it to me, sharing it with me and congratulating me and the whole Title V team.
Are you going to San Jose to receive the award?
Correct. Dr. Lacey and Dr. Brian Reese and I will be all going up to San Jose on November 18th. Mm-hmm. Normally, Professor Lynn Sterwin would join us, but she has another professional development activity on campus. She's the co-coordinator of iFalcon.
What would you want students to know about iFalcon for those who aren't aware of it?
I would encourage students to visit the website. They can find the iFalcon website from the college main page. I would encourage students to ask their instructors, their professors across campus about iFalcon. And I would want them to understand that iFalcon is a program that helps introduce students to the habits of mind that successful students practice. The goal of iFalcon help every single student at Cerritos College identify their goals for achievement, for academic achievement, and then to pursue and achieve their goals for academic achievement. Whether that achievement is for a professional certificate, whether it's for an AA degree, or whether it's transferred to a four-year institution.
Is there anything else you'd like to say?
Just that I have been to several conferences recently, and I've seen the work of other community colleges, and people around the state are really focusing on student success, but Cerritos College really is exemplary in its support from the administration down of success of our students, and we want to continue that tradition.
The Cerritos College Music Department and the Associated Students of Cerritos College presented Do You Hear What I Hear on Friday. The objective of the program is to present piano literature as either solo or chamber music. The lecture consists of musical elements, history, and performance. Staff writer Nuri Vargas reporting.
My first name is Sung-ae. My last name is Lee. Sung-ae Lee. I'm an adjunct faculty here in the music department of Cerritos College.
What did you just play?
I just played Prokofiev, the Russian composer, Sergei Prokofiev's first piano concerto in D-flat major.
Has this been your first time performing at
the... This is my probably fifth or sixth time since we started this in a series a couple years ago. Dr. Lopez is a coordinator and director of this program, and I've been always the active participant and performer for this series. So I've been playing for every concert series, yes.
How is it playing for the students and seeing them?
It's always exciting, more exciting to play for students, my own students, because I have a lot of students from my own class and my applied students, and also all the music students and non-music students coming in and hear something like this for the first time in their life, and then they seem to really enjoy it and appreciate it. So it's so rewarding to me, and it's always great to play for my students.
How was the crowd today?
They were great. They were great crowds, and as you could tell, it was a full house, and everybody was very attentive, and I could tell they were enjoying it, too.
Dr. Lopez, and my position is I'm the director of the Applied Program and also the coordinator of the Keyboard Studies Program.
Today, what were you hosting, and do you hear what I hear?
Actually, the program that I put together was called Do You Hear What I Hear? Mm-hmm. It's a piano lecture concert series with my intention and objective to present piano literature, either as solo or as chamber music in the program and in my lecture.
And this way you hope to influence students?
In a lot of different ways. I'm hoping to, in focusing on one particular topic, I'm hoping to be able to address... I'm trying to bring a different audience. I'm trying to bring an audience of students who are in Music 100, who are the music history course students, and also the students in Music 105, and also my piano students. Because what I'm doing here is I'm talking about music elements, I'm talking about history, and of course then we have the performance. So all of those elements are what these students are getting in class. But in this case, we're just focusing on one thing, which I think is a lot easier for them to understand and walk away with a better understanding of one concept rather than many concepts.
How often do you host the event?
I do it 4 to 5 times a year. So I try to do like 3 in the fall and then maybe another. See, this semester I'm doing 2 in the fall with a master class. And then in the spring I'm doing Debussy is one of my composers, Brahms, and then I have a guest performer. And that's the other thing I have to mention is my particular concert series. I'm also trying to feature as many times as I can my own piano faculty and music faculty, but then I'm also bringing guests. So in the fall, I'm going to bring one of the piano faculty from Cal State Long Beach, and in the spring, I'm bringing a piano faculty from Cal State Fullerton.
This performance today was your faculty, correct?
All Cerritos College faculty, yes.
What did you play today?
I was the orchestra.
Okay.
I was strictly the orchestra.
The orchestra.
Because this was, like I said, this was the concerti. This was a topic about the piano being a solo instrument. Mm-hmm. And when that happens, then, of course, that means they're being accompanied by an orchestra. But we can't have an orchestra here today. So what we do is they've written piano parts to resemble the orchestra.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm, to supply the orchestra part. So that's why you heard 2 pianos today.
Bruce Russell, and I'm an adjunct music instructor.
What did you play today?
I played the first movement of Brahms' D minor piano concerto.
And how was that for you?
It was exciting.
What was your favorite part playing?
Favorite part was... being expressive and making this piece sound beautiful.
How do you influence your students coming to your performances, or how do you help to influence the college students?
I really like making them feel comfortable with their performing. Told them a little bit about what they were going to hear today before we came down from our classroom, because I was in class with them before we came. You know, I tried to make them so that they enjoy the music.
Is this your first time here performing for the program? Do you hear what I hear?
Yeah, yeah.
What?
I played for the faculty galas before, but this is my first time playing for this.
How was it? Like, was it a different feeling, or was it like, how was it like different?
Oh, it was fun. I'm glad we got to do it. It's a beautiful piece, and I'm glad we were able to share it with the students.
Del Villar Asia.
What is your major?
In nursing.
Nursing? Yeah. Okay. Was your first time coming? Do you hear what I hear?
No. No. Every time I watch. Listen to.
How was it? How did you think about it?
Oh, it's really great because we could really feel, you know, the emotions of the performers, and they're very disciplined and their technique and everything. It's helping me in a way because I play the piano, so the more I listen to them, the more it helps my musicality, mm-hmm. and like the evenness of the sound and everything, dynamics and just the duo pianist. Helping us to be sensitive and how to listen to each other, because I'm in the piano ensemble class also. Mm-hmm. So it gives us the idea of how a performer play in live, you know, how they really focus on the music, and engaging the audience is very important. Mm-hmm. Presence of mind and everything. So it's just helping me in all aspects of music. Oh. Yeah.
What was your favorite piece today that they played?
The last one, the cadence by Prokofiev. Yeah, in the program.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, just feel the energy and everything.
Yeah.
This has been the 10th installment of Talon Mark's Campus News Hour here on WPMD.org on the net. We thank you for listening and would like to remind you to pick up the latest printed edition of Talon Mark's at news racks located throughout campus. We would also like to invite you to log on to talonmarks.com for the latest in breaking news here at Cerritos College. On behalf of the Talon Mark's news staff, I'm Campus News Hour Director Tito Benavides. Have a great day, Falcons.